Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Mick McCarthy.
What?
I'm typing on my Google Doc saying Morata is right. I didn't think he played in the Prem. Yes.
The point's been declared.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
Off the Ball's Breakfast Bite. Giving you a flavour of Ireland's sports breakfast show.
Past 9:40. I'm delighted to say we are joined by bronze medalist from the European Indoor Athletics Championships, Kate O'Connor. Kate, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
What part of the world are you in?
I am back home. I'm in Dundalk. I landed home yesterday. So yeah, just trying to kind of come down a little bit, rest, recover, that sort of thing.
Yeah, rest, recover, but not too much rest and recovery because you're heading to the World Championships.
I know, it's a really quick turnaround. And to be honest, it's a little bit weird because we are the last event at European Champs and we're the first at Worlds. So it is, it's a really, really quick turnaround, but it's the same for everyone. So
obviously by securing the medal, it guaranteed qualification. Did you have in your head that you were going to be going to China anyway? Was this clearly always part of the plan?
It was definitely part of the plan, but I suppose you never know if you're going to a championship until you get the invite. So got my invitation through yesterday. So yeah, now I know I'm kind of on that plane and I suppose I've got another chance to have another go at it.
And that's great because it means that there's like an automatic immediate reward for what you've just achieved, which is kind of career defining anyway.
Yeah, definitely. I think that like there's pros and cons to it because in one way I would love to enjoy this medal and kind of be able to celebrate properly and that sort of thing, but which I will do. It's just going to be postponed slightly to after World Indoors. But yeah, definitely. I'm in great form, probably the best form of my life. And I really just want to try and lap it up as much as I can and take all the opportunities that come my way. So yeah, I think World Indoors is another opportunity. And I'll go over and I'll try to perform just as good.
And is the rest of your year mapped out then as well?
Yeah, somewhat. So plan is after indoors to take a couple of weeks break because it's a long season. Worlds outdoors aren't until September. So going to take 2 weeks just to kind of chill. And then competition wise before World Outdoors, we're not sure yet. It kind of depends where I am on the ranking list and that sort of thing. But yeah, definitely World Champs is the main focus in September then.
Okay, so maybe talk us through your last 12 months, will you? Because obviously you go to the Olympic Games and that experience of being in Paris seems to be something that has really stood to you. Can you talk to us about the value of that experience?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think probably something that I didn't really push out too much was earlier in the year. So January of last year, I had a really, really bad accident in the gym. Where I like ruptured ligaments in my ankle and like my foot still isn't the same as before that accident. There was talks of surgery, there was talks of that I was finished for the year. So really all year last year was like I was playing catch up and I was chasing qualification and I just really, really, really wanted to make the Olympics. And then I got there and I probably wasn't in the best shape that I could have been in, but considering what had happened during the year and the fact that I even made it in the first place was madness. And the plan was just to enjoy that Olympic experience because I'd worked so hard all year to actually get there. But one thing about me is I'm so competitive. And I just remember like after the competition, I was really satisfied with what I did because I worked with what I had and the time that I had for myself. But I have always known in myself that I could be one of the best in the world. And I was looking at those top girls and I just knew in myself that like I could get there and I could be up there with those girls. So after that, I kind of came back and had a good chat with my team. And I kind of really wanted to change everybody's mindset that worked around me because I don't want to be just an athlete that turns up and competes at championships. I want to turn up and I want a medal because I work hard. And some parts of me think if I'm going to work this hard, I want to get rewards. So yeah, that was a huge thing that we did this year. Everybody's mindset changed and everyone's expectations of me changed, which meant that every day I was turning up to training and I was given 110% over and over again. And if I'm being honest, I didn't think that the changes would have rewards so quickly. But yeah, it's really exciting for me that like just like small little subtle changes like that and just kind of those extra 1 or 2% every day training can get me a bronze medal so quickly.
Who's on that team that you're talking to? What's that group?
So I suppose like my close inner circle that I work with every day. On the track, I've got two coaches. So my head coach is my dad, which, yeah, that's a really special, I suppose, relationship. And then my dad's right-hand man on the track is Tom Reynolds. And then physio I see every day is Kerry Kirk, and then S&C Robbie Bramner. So they're kind of like my like really close inner circle. There's obviously a lot more moving parts to the puzzle, but those are the guys that like are around every day that, you know, have really helped me get here.
Coming soon to your Off the Ball podcast feed.
I'm nervous and police will use tear gas.
Yes. Oh, Jesus.
You're looking at two of the best professional wrestlers in Mexico City.
Saying we won after your team's won a football game is like saying I had sex after I'm watching porn.
So if you hear anything about the Gringo Loco, that's me, okay?
We were on our own at 3,600 meters.
We have that mark as narcos, cocaine, violence, as a Pablo Escobar thing.
To be honest with you, if I never see Route 40 again, I will be a happy, happy man.
Diverted. A 10-part Off the Ball original series telling the story of sport and other things all the way through Latin America.
I thought Ruta 40 was the most lonely road in the world. Turns out Ruta 25 is somehow even lonelier.
Available soon for free on the OTB app.
At 2 minutes past eight, we're saying good morning to Mike Sherry. Mike, how are you doing?
Good, guys. How are you?
Well, interested to see what comes next, really, in terms of the future for Irish rugby. It's either a massive learning or it's not that important. It's like a singular one-off thing that happened where France played really well and we played really badly. And I can see how it's a little bit from column A and a little bit from column B, but are the plates of world rugby shifting at the moment?
Yeah, it certainly feels a little bit like that. I think when you think back to 2012, Ireland played England in Twickenham and they got obliterated at scrum time, and there was a huge focus put on scrummaging at grassroots all the way up developing props. So there was a massive chain reaction to that, and I think one of the things to come out of Saturday was speed kills and how we need speed merchants on the pitch, and France did, and they absolutely ran riot at certain times, and we looked quite lethargic and slow, and that was the speed of the game. It was age profile of players, it was a lot of different factors, but I certainly think that speed and getting out and out speed on the wings is something that will definitely come of this game, and something that the RFU will be looking into over the coming weeks and months to see how can they attract athletes to rugby, how can they attract different backgrounds into the game, and leverage off that side of things, because that was certainly something that stood out massively.
The other thing I suppose is the debate around the bench split and getting big beasts onto your bench who ideally can also run fast, as you pointed out. Is this... Let's assume that the World Rugby doesn't change the rules or the laws and you can do whatever you want with your bench. Is this something that we're going to need to experiment with, or are we right to zig while it seems like the bigger nations are zagging?
Yeah, look, I don't think a 7-1 would suit us given our player profile. I think a 6-2 allows us to still bring fresh legs onto the pitch from a forwards perspective, as well as covering ourselves throughout the back line. So I just don't think there's a compelling case to do it from an Irish perspective at the minute. I know you see the likes of South Africa and France doing it, but the case for them is that they have these behemoths that they want to get onto the pitch. Ireland play a different game. We're more structured. We're more detailed in what we do. And until we unearth a couple more Joe McCarthy's that we can put onto the bench across the front row, second row and back row, I don't think we're going to go for it. I just don't think it suits our game, our coaching methods, our mindset. We're not attuned to it. Now, having said that, if teams keep doing it and keep getting benefit from it, it may be something we look at. But currently, I don't see the player profile and the rationale for it.
You mentioned speed there, Mike. How does the team, like, we've never really been known for our speed on the wings, or even just our general backline. How do we go about stopping a team like France? Because we have before. It's never been a problem in terms of, like, last year we go and beat France and Marseille, but we look completely out of our depth whenever they had the ball in play. How do we go about neutralising speed like that if we don't necessarily have that on our wings, like with Osborne and Nash?
Yeah, it's very hard. Like, I watched the game again yesterday, and the amount of times France picked and went through the middle, and that compresses your defensive line, so you keep having to compress in and defend close into the ruck, and they just got the ball away time and time again. Dupont is a master at dragging defenders in, two or three people to bring him down, and he still manages to get the ball away. And the end effect of that is that Ireland from the outside need to compress in, plug a hole in the middle of the pitch, and then you're leaving yourself short out wide. And France don't even play particularly wide in terms of fanning out. They just have an ability to get the ball to a winger or a speedster in or in the middle of the pitch or over a little bit towards the 15-metre line, and then they get wide that way. And that's where the benefit of speed comes in. So BLBRE can get the ball 15 metres in, and he can still pull width within 1 to 2 seconds and get out to a wide channel. So it's very, very hard to defend. And yeah, look, that's the brilliance of Dupont. It's the brilliance of the French play, how big their forwards are getting over the game line. So it's just a very, very hard thing to defend. I don't have the answer of how you stop it. Stop it at source, really, would probably be the main thing that stands out. But how you do that is another question.
To listen to this morning's full Off The Ball breakfast, become a member at offtheball.com/join now.